At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, so are you ready for this? We are diving deep, deep into the first week of Trump's second presidency.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, it has been a whirlwind. So to unpack it all, we're turning to a recent article from electoral-vote.com. Now, for those unfamiliar, Electoral Vote is a website known for its election analysis, shall we say, but also for its pretty critical take on the 47th president, who, as we know, is back for round two.
Yeah, they definitely don't pull any punches in this piece. They're very upfront about their skepticism of Trump's motivations and some of those early actions he's taken.
Right. It's pretty scathing. But, you know, even though Electoral Vote leans left, I think their analysis can still be useful. It gives us another perspective to consider, right? So what are some of the key things that jumped out at you from this article? What should we be paying attention to?
Well, one of the most striking observations they make is that Trump seems to be governing with the same playbook he used in his first term. There's this emphasis on optics over substance, which raises some questions about the effectiveness, the long-term impact of his decisions.
Interesting. So it's more about appearances than actual results.
Yeah, that's the argument. They point to this victory lap memo that came out of the White House, touting over 300 executive actions in just 1 week. Now, on the surface, that sounds pretty impressive, right?
It does.
But when you dig a little deeper, you find that many of these actions are more symbolic gestures than actual substantial policy changes.
Ah, I see. So it's about creating this illusion of action, even if the reality is a little different.
Exactly. Take the firings at the Department of Justice, for instance. Trump dismissed a number of lawyers who had worked on investigations into him.
And now the investigations are over, he's back in office, so what's the point of that?
Right, exactly. It seems kind of pointless from a practical perspective. The article suggests it's purely vindictive, a way to punish perceived enemies and, you know, project this image of strength, even if it doesn't really accomplish anything concrete.
It's like he's sending a message, like, don't mess with me.
Yeah, that's one way to interpret it. And this pattern kind of repeats itself in other areas, like reinstating the transgender military ban. Despite the fact that, you know, evidence suggests that trans soldiers don't actually pose a threat to military readiness.
Right. And there's also that move to halt diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, you know, DEI in clinical trials.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That one's interesting.
I mean, wait, halting DEI in medical research, that doesn't really make sense to me. I thought the whole point was to have diverse participants in trials to ensure that treatments are effective for everyone.
Right, and that's exactly the point the article makes. They use the example of Primakine, a malaria drug, and it turned out that this drug was actually less effective for people of African or Mediterranean descent because of a genetic difference.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so the argument is that if you ignore these kinds of factors in clinical trials, you risk developing treatments that don't work for everyone.
That's a really good point. It seems like these decisions are being driven more by ideology than by science or the actual well-being of the American people.
Yeah, that's the critique that the article is leveling. And then there's also the decision to freeze funding for PEPFAR, the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief.
Hold on, PEPFAR. Remind me, what is that exactly?
So PEPFAR is a program that provides life-saving AIDS medication in Africa.
Oh, right.
And the Trump administration has basically put a halt to all funding for it.
Really? Wow.
They claim that it's going to save, you know, $1.75 billion. But the article really highlights the human cost of this decision. They're saying that countless lives are now at risk because people will lose access to these medications.
That's incredibly troubling. It feels like, again, it's another example of prioritizing short-term gains over long-term consequences.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And this focus on optics, you know, it's not just limited to things like funding or policy decisions. It also plays out in the way that certain actions are being carried out, like the immigration raids, for example.
Well, yeah, right.
The way they're being conducted with cameras following ICE officers, it feels more like a reality show than a law enforcement operation.
Yeah, and the article even mentions that they brought Dr. Phil along to film a raid.
I know, right? It's pretty bizarre.
It's like they're trying to create this spectacle, you know, this display of force for a very specific audience.
Exactly. It's all about sending a message, playing to the base, reinforcing a certain image. And this emphasis on appearances over substance, I mean, it really seems to be a recurring theme in Trump's governing style.
Yeah, that's what's coming through loud and clear from this piece. So we've talked about Trump's actions on the domestic front, but the article also delves into how this approach is playing out on the international stage. And let's just say the results are a bit more mixed.
Yeah, definitely. That's a whole other can of worms, really.
Well, let's open that can, shall we? Because I'm curious to hear what Electoral Vote has to say about Trump's foreign policy maneuvers and how those might be impacting America's standing in the world.
All right, well, let's jump right in. So the article specifically calls out Trump's tactics when it comes to immigration, particularly his pressure on other countries to accept deported immigrants. It's a pretty aggressive approach, to say the least.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like he's playing hardball.
He is. And while it seems to have worked in the short term, at least with countries like Colombia, the article warns that this strategy might not be sustainable in the long run. There's only so much pressure these countries are willing to take before they start pushing back.
It's like he's walking a tightrope, right? Push too hard and the whole thing could come crashing down.
Exactly. They even quote New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu in the article. He predicts that eventually some country is going to call Trump's bluff and they'll likely use tariffs as leverage.
Oh, interesting. Tariffs, that could get messy.
Yeah, if that happens, we could be looking at a trade war, which wouldn't be good for anyone, really.
A trade war. Can you break that down for me a bit? I mean, I know it's when countries basically impose tariffs on each other's goods.
Yeah.
But what's the real world impact of that? Like, what does it actually mean for people?
Well, imagine everything you buy at the store suddenly gets a lot more expensive. That's one potential consequence. But it goes beyond that. A trade war can also disrupt global supply chains, hurt businesses, and ultimately slow down economic growth. It's really a lose-lose situation for everyone involved.
Okay, so the stakes are pretty high then. And while all of this is happening, the article points out that China is watching very closely. Sounds a little ominous, to be honest.
It is a bit. The concern is that if the U.S. starts alienating its allies with these aggressive tactics, it creates a power vacuum. And China is more than ready to step in and fill that void.
So they're just waiting in the wings, ready to capitalize on any missteps by the U.S.
Precisely. Now, the article does mention a glimmer of hope. It seems the administration might be realizing that their hardball approach has its limits. They've been quietly negotiating with El Salvador to accept a large number of relocated immigrants.
So they're looking for countries that are willing to take in deportees, even if it means offering incentives or making concessions.
That's the impression I got. But the article also points out that El Salvador is a relatively small country. It only has a population of about 6 million people. So they can only absorb so many immigrants before it starts to strain their resources.
Right. There's a limit to how much they can handle. Okay. So the international scene is a bit of a mixed bag. Some wins for Trump, but also some potential pitfalls down the road. But what about the situation closer to home? The article spends a good chunk of time on his feud with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and it doesn't paint a very flattering picture.
No, it doesn't. DeSantis, who, you know, at one point was considered a potential rival to Trump within the Mad J sphere, well, the article portrays him as almost a pawn in Trump's game. They argue that DeSantis made a critical mistake by challenging Trump directly, and now he's paying the price.
So it's like a cautionary tale. Don't mess with the king.
You could say that. The article highlights how the Florida legislature, which is controlled by Republicans, by the way, has essentially sided with Trump over DeSantis. They rejected his anti-immigration proposal and then immediately passed their own version, which they named the Trump Act.
Wow, talk about throwing shade.
Right. It's a pretty clear message of who they're supporting.
So DeSantis is losing support within his own party.
It seems that way. And to make matters worse, they also overrode his veto on legislative funding. They're not afraid to defy him, which sends a pretty strong signal.
Yeah, it sounds like DeSantis might be on shaky ground politically. But let's shift gears a bit and talk about those January 6th pardons. The article revisits that issue, focusing on the potential for some of those pardoned individuals to, well, commit more crimes.
Right. They highlight two specific cases. Matthew Huddle, who was killed in a police shootout just days after receiving his pardon. And then there's Andrew Tate, who was pardoned for his actions on January 6th, but is now a fugitive wanted for soliciting sex from a minor.
Oh, wow. That's really concerning. So these cases seem to support the article's earlier warnings about the risks of pardoning potentially dangerous individuals.
Exactly. It's a stark reminder of the potential consequences of those decisions, even years later. But there is one point in the article that offers a possible glimmer of hope, at least for Trump's opponents. They mention a poll suggesting that a significant portion of Americans, including some Republicans, are uncomfortable with Trump's close ties to billionaires.
Oh, interesting. You mean the idea that he's too cozy with the ultra-wealthy?
Exactly. The APNORC poll found that 60% of voters overall, and even 35% of Republicans, don't think Trump should be taking his cues from billionaires.
Wow. Those are pretty significant numbers.
Yeah, and the article suggests that this could be a vulnerability for Trump, a potential weakness that Democrats could exploit.
So maybe there's an opportunity for Democrats to portray Trump as out of touch with the average American.
Right. More interested in serving the interests of the wealthy elite than the needs of working families.
That's the idea.
The article even draws a parallel to Truman's Do Nothing Congress campaign back in 1948. He successfully framed his opponents as being beholden to special interests and out of touch with the common person.
That's a really interesting comparison. But it's one thing to identify a potential weakness. It's another to actually capitalize on it.
Absolutely. And the article raises a really intriguing question about how this anti-billionaire sentiment could impact Trump's relationship with Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah. Musk has been a very vocal supporter of Trump. So is this a potential point of friction between them?
It's definitely a dynamic worth watching. If public discomfort with plutocracy continues to grow, it could put pressure on Trump to distance himself from Musk. And that could have some interesting implications for both of them.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Trump's aggressive tactics, both at home and abroad, his feud with DeSantis, the fallout from the January 6th pardons, and this emerging anti-billionaire sentiment. It's a lot to process.
It is, and I think the main takeaway here is that Trump's second term is shaping up to be just as turbulent and unpredictable as his first.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is just the first week. Who knows what surprises the next 4 years might hold?
Yeah, only time will tell.
But one thing's for sure, it's going to be a wild ride.
Buckle up.
All right, folks, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Trump's first week back in the Oval Office. It's been a fascinating, albeit slightly unsettling, journey.
It certainly has. And this is just the beginning. The political landscape is constantly shifting. And we'll be here to break it all down for you, helping you navigate the complexities and make sense of it all.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. And be sure to tune in next time when we'll tackle another intriguing topic, extracting those key insights to help you stay informed and engaged.
Until then, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.
So we've talked about Trump's actions on the domestic front. But the article also delves into how this approach is playing out on the international stage. And let's just say the results are a bit more mixed.
Yeah, definitely. It's a whole other can of worms, really.
Well, let's open that can, shall we? Because I'm curious to hear what Electoral Vote has to say about Trump's foreign policy maneuvers and how those might be impacting America's standing in the world.
All right, well, let's jump right in. So the article specifically calls out Trump's tactics when it comes to immigration, particularly his pressure on other countries to accept deported immigrants. It's a pretty aggressive approach, to say the least.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like he's playing hardball.
He is. And while it seems to have worked in the short term, at least with countries like Colombia, the article warns that this strategy might not be sustainable in the long run. There's only so much pressure these countries are willing to take before they start pushing back.
It's like he's walking a tightrope, right?
Yeah.
Push too hard and the whole thing could come crashing down.
Exactly. They even quote New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu in the article. He predicts that eventually some country is going to call Trump's bluff, and they'll likely use tariffs as leverage.
Oh, interesting. Tariffs, that could get messy.
Yeah. If that happens, we could be looking at a trade war, which wouldn't be good for anyone, really.
A trade war. Can you break that down for me a bit? I mean, I know it's when countries basically impose tariffs on each other's goods, but what's the real world impact of that? Like, what does it actually mean for people?
Well, imagine everything you buy at the store suddenly gets a lot more expensive. That's one potential consequence. But it goes beyond that. A trade war can also disrupt global supply chains, hurt businesses, and ultimately slow down economic growth. It's really a lose-lose situation for everyone involved.
Okay, so the stakes are pretty high then. And while all of this is happening, the article points out that China is watching very closely. It sounds a little ominous, to be honest.
It is a bit. The concern is that if the U.S. starts alienating its allies with these aggressive tactics, it creates a power vacuum. And China is more than ready to step in and fill that void.
So they're just waiting in the wings, ready to capitalize on any missteps by the U.S.
Precisely. Now, the article does mention a glimmer of hope. It seems the administration might be realizing that their hardball approach has its limits. They've been quietly negotiating with El Salvador to accept a large number of relocated immigrants.
So they're looking for countries that are willing to take in deportees, even if it means offering incentives or making concessions.
That's the impression I got. But the article also points out that El Salvador is a relatively small country. It only has a population of about 6 million people. So they can only absorb so many immigrants before it starts to strain their resources.
Right. There's a limit to how much they can handle. Okay, so the international scene is a bit of a mixed bag. Some wins for Trump, but also some potential pitfalls down the road. But what about the situation closer to home? The article spends a good chunk of time on his feud with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And it doesn't paint a very flattering picture.
No, it doesn't. DeSantis, who you know at one point was considered a potential rival to Trump within the AGA sphere, well, the article portrays him as almost a pawn in Trump's game. They argue that DeSantis made a critical mistake by challenging Trump directly, and now he's paying the price.
So it's like a cautionary tale. Don't mess with the king.
You could say that. The article highlights how the Florida legislature, which is controlled by Republicans, by the way, has essentially sided with Trump over DeSantis. They rejected his anti-immigration proposal and then immediately passed their own version, which they named the Trump Act.
Wow, talk about throwing shade.
Right. It's a pretty clear message of who they're supporting.
So DeSantis is losing support within his own party.
It seems that way. And to make matters worse, they also overrode his veto on legislative funding. They're not afraid to defy him, which sends a pretty strong signal.
Yeah, it sounds like DeSantis might be on shaky ground politically. But let's shift gears a bit and talk about those January 6th pardons. The article revisits that issue, focusing on the potential for some of those pardoned individuals to, well, commit more crimes.
Right. They highlight two specific cases. Matthew Huddle, who was killed in a police shootout just days after receiving his pardon. And then there's Andrew Tate, who was pardoned for his actions on January 6th, but is now a fugitive wanted for soliciting sex from a minor.
Oh, wow. That's really concerning. So these cases seem to support the article's earlier warnings about the risks of pardoning potentially dangerous individuals.
Exactly. It's a stark reminder of the potential consequences of those decisions, even years later. But there is one point in the article that offers a possible glimmer of hope, at least for Trump's opponents. They mention a poll suggesting that a significant portion of Americans, including some Republicans, are uncomfortable with Trump's close ties to billionaires.
Oh, interesting. You mean the idea that he's too cozy with the ultra-wealthy?
Exactly. The AP-NRRC poll found that 60% of voters overall, and even 35% of Republicans, don't think Trump should be taking his cues from billionaires.
Wow, those are pretty significant numbers.
Yeah, and the article suggests that this could be a vulnerability for Trump, a potential weakness that Democrats could exploit.
So maybe there's an opportunity for Democrats to portray Trump as out of touch with the average American.
Right. More interested in serving the interests of the wealthy elite than the needs of working families.
That's the idea.
The article even draws a parallel to Truman's Do Nothing Congress campaign back in 1948. He successfully framed his opponents as being beholden to special interests and out of touch with the common person.
That's a really interesting comparison. But it's one thing to identify a potential weakness. It's another to actually capitalize on it.
Absolutely. And the article raises a really intriguing question about how this anti-billionaire sentiment could impact Trump's relationship with Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah. Musk has been a very vocal supporter of Trump. So is this a potential point of friction between them?
It's definitely a dynamic worth watching. If public discomfort with plutocracy continues to grow, it could put pressure on Trump to distance himself from Musk. And that could have some interesting implications for both of them.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Trump's aggressive tactics, both at home and abroad, his feud with DeSantis, the fallout from the January 6th pardons, and this emerging anti-billionaire sentiment. It's a lot to process.
It is a lot to process. And I think the main takeaway here is that Trump's second term is shaping up to be just as turbulent and unpredictable as his first.
I think that's a fair assessment. And, you know, this is just the first week. Who knows what surprises the next 4 years might hold?
Yeah, only time will tell.
But one thing's for sure, it's going to be a wild ride.
Buckle up.
All right, folks, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Trump's first week back in the Oval Office. It's been a fascinating, albeit slightly unsettling, journey.
It certainly has, and this is just the beginning. The political landscape is constantly shifting, and we'll be here to break it all down for you, helping you navigate the complexities and make sense of it all.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and be sure to tune in next time when we'll tackle another intriguing topic, extracting those key insights to help you stay informed and engaged.
Until then, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.